I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Sandtown, Winchester was Freddie Gray's neighborhood in West Baltimore. It's where he grew up. It's where he was arrested on April 12th. Even before we knew Freddie Gray's name, Midday focused on Sandtown, Winchester because of a report about the high number of its residents who ended up in Maryland prisons. That's just one of the bleak measures of life in the 72-block area known as Sandtown. 2 decades after developer James Rouse's famous effort to renew that neighborhood, Sandtown has gained attention because of Freddie Gray's life and death. Today, we revisit the neighborhood with, among others, Kurt Schmoke, who was mayor at the time Rouse launched his multi-million dollar effort. Was it a failure? Will the Freddie Gray tragedy spark a restart? Back to Freddie's neighborhood on Midday after the news. And welcome to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks here as we continue our coverage and conversations following a week of turmoil in Baltimore that saw rioting, demonstrations, and the arrests of 6 police officers in the death of Freddie Gray. The news today, Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake asking the Department of Justice to investigate city police practices and saying that officers will have body cameras by 2016. This is being reported in the Baltimore Sun today as news. The mayor called a press conference this morning to announce this. I am wondering what is the news about this. I thought the Department of Justice was already on the case. But anyway, the mayor noted that complaints of police brutality have been down and highlighted other improvements by the department. She said, we have seen results from these efforts. We have to get it right. Failure is not an option. The mayor said the Department of Justice will investigate what systemic challenges exist in our department, end quote. And at the end of the process, she said she will hold those accountable if changes are not made. We'll have more on this as the hour progresses and as we get into the second hour of Midday today. Meanwhile, Governor Larry Hogan of Maryland said he would lift the state of emergency that he imposed on Baltimore 10 days ago. He said the National Guard and police from other jurisdictions are now gone from the city. More details as we move along here this hour and next. Sandtown, Winchester was Freddie Gray's neighborhood in West Baltimore. It's where he grew up. It's where he was arrested on April 12th, a week before his death from injuries sustained while in police custody. Even before we knew Freddie Gray's name, Midday focused on Sandtown, Winchester. You may remember the show that we did here several weeks ago. I hosted an hour-long discussion because of a report from the Justice Policy Institute about the high number of its Sandtown, Winchester's residents who ended up in Maryland prisons. According to the JPI, Sandtown, Winchester is the home of more people held in state prisons than any other census tract in the state. And the 458 inmates from the community cost the state of Maryland, cost taxpayers $17 million a year to incarcerate. That's money that the JPI and the Prison Policy Initiative said would be better invested in improving the community. The incarceration rate is just one of the bleak measures of life in the 72-block area known as Sandtown. The area still registers poorly by the measures of the Baltimore City Health Department in lead paint violations, in liquor store density, in third and fourth grade reading proficiency, juvenile arrests, domestic violence, and life expectancy. There are still plenty of boarded-up houses in Sandtown, Winchester. It was the focus of a bold renewal effort in the 1990s led by the late developer James Rouse during the administration of Mayor Kurt L. Schmoke. Jim Rouse, the man who gave us Columbia and Harbor Place, among many other developments, wanted to make a difference in a distressed Baltimore neighborhood. He wanted to bring Sandtown, Winchester new and affordable housing and other services that the neighborhood's low-income residents badly needed. More than 20 years later, the narrative of Sandtown, Winchester has become one of failure. But is that the whole story? What worked and what didn't? We're going to get into that today. Can the Freddie Gray tragedy, which has brought national attention to Baltimore and to specifically his neighborhood, spark a restart of James Rouse's efforts? Those efforts came during the administration of Kurt Schmoke. As I said, Kurt Schmoke, now the president of the University of Baltimore, will be joining us in the second hour of today's show as we devote both hours of Midday to understanding more about Sandtown and the efforts that have been made and are still being made there. Congressman Elijah Cummings will be joining us as well this hour in just a few minutes with an array of guests on both hours of the show, people who live in Sandton or have been involved in efforts to raise the quality of life there. We start with F. Barton Harvey III, the man who succeeded Jim Rouse as CEO of the Enterprise Foundation after Mr. Rouse's death in 1996. The Enterprise Foundation, now known as Enterprise Community Partners, Enterprise Community Investment, has invested $10 billion in low-income communities across the country, helping to create and finance more than 250,000 homes. In Sandtown, Enterprise directed investments of more than $130 million to transform the community with new and affordable housing. Those houses, known as Nehemiah Homes, were built for first-time homeowners and remain today as one of the project's greatest legacies, with home ownership still strong. But over the years, within the 72 square blocks of Sandtown, jobs never materialized. Retail and other businesses did not commit to the area. So we're going to get to talk about all this today with Bart Harvey joining us by phone. Thank you for joining us, and welcome to Midday, Bart.
Thank you, Dan, very much.
You know, you heard me say that the narrative kind of became Sandtown was a failure, a blighted area where millions of dollars were spent over the years, and it's a failure. I think, actually, the media has used that term. We've discussed it here on Midday a few weeks ago. What do you want to say about that? When people say that to you, well, it didn't work, did it, Bart? What do you say?
Well, I think that parts of it worked extremely well, and some parts of it didn't work, which we learned from. Interestingly, Dan, right after the Monday night of rioting and looting, the next day I went down to clean up, and I looked through Sandtown Winchester, 524 homes that were built, some of them in partnership with the Build, Baltimore's United and Leadership Development, and all of them were untouched, and all of them looked better than when they were first put in 25 years ago. So the affordable and if you take it through the time of the financial collapse, the Great Recession, and you looked at the default rates during that period of time, from the 1990s until today, less than 4% have had defaults or foreclosures. And the people that are in those houses are working. And they're in healthcare and retail, food services, 70% in the private sector, 30% in government jobs. But that's a success, and that they were untouched is also a success. And that the clergy banded together with Elijah Cummings and others also said that there is a core, and Build is a number of clergy leaders on the west side who all have a stake in that community, that there is a social a cohesion and a heart that still beats and beats well in Sandtown Winchester.
Bart Harvey, stay right there on the phone with us. I have more questions for you, but I also want to introduce Carol Reckling, because I'm glad you mentioned Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development, or BUILD. Carol Reckling is executive director of the Child First Authority, but she's part of the senior leadership team of BUILD, and she has worked in the Sandtown community for years, working on partnerships between nonprofits, residents, the city government. Nice to have you with us on the show, Carol.
Thank you.
You know, Bart Harvey mentioned 524 homes. I believe that the number may even be higher than that when we look at, new homes since the mid or early 1990s. Is
yes.
that right?
Yeah, there was some Hope 6 homes that were built.
Hope 6 was a federal project,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think one of the things I'd like to say is that when Build had the idea to do this, and Jim Rouse was a wonderful partner, the idea that we had and that we actually had to convince Mr. Rouse of was that there needed to be a critical mass of homes, that you could, doing one block or two block really wouldn't make the kind of difference that we were looking for. But we also knew, as important as housing is to rebuilding a community, it's not the only thing, but it's important. And as a result, from the beginning, as soon as people signed their mortgage, they had $20,000 in equity in these homes, first-time home buyers. And as Bart said, you know, those homes look better today than they did when they were built.
It is impressive. The numbers are impressive. 524 homes built, another, how many from Hope 6? That brings us up to like 600 homes or more?
Not sure.
Go ahead. Habitat for Humanity also took care of 300
That's
houses
right.
on rehabbing as well, and they stand and are terrific part of it, and that's part of New Song, school, etc. All of that is intact. It's not enough, but it's all intact, and it's there, and it is the core of the neighborhood. Now around it are boarded up houses, et cetera. And because there weren't enough jobs and there was an economic development that followed on to it, you do have all the signs of distress that are south of it, et cetera. And jobs is the big issue, and it is the one that was not a success. And I'd love to discuss that more with you, too, as to what
okay.
we learned about that.
All right, Bart. I want to ask both you and Carol this question to give our listeners a sense of the perspective here. First question is, when we talk about between six and 700 homes, either new or renovated.
More than that,
you think. Okay. That sounds like a lot to people. And yet we're talking about an area of town that's still afflicted with all sorts of problems, serious problems, entrenched problems. Okay. Is the scale too big? If we talk about Sandtown Winchester, 72 square blocks, sprawling area of West Baltimore, did Jim Rouse and everybody just bite off more than they could chew? That's number one. And number two is trying to reverse the trends of, you know, 30 or 40 years or 50 years of poverty and the loss of blue-collar jobs, deindustrialization of Baltimore, you know, we just haven't given it enough time. So I guess I'm talking about my two questions have to do with scale of the area we're talking about and what you might expect, what the expectations would be in terms of success, and then also reversing trends that have been in place, mm-hmm. seismic shift in our economy over the last 50 years. You want to take that first, Carol?
Yeah,
and then
I have quite a few thoughts on that, and they have to do with what it takes to bring change. And I think that when we looked at the area, you know, Sandtown, Winchester, we were thinking very big. I compare this to my time at the same time in the 80s, if you recall, there had been disinvestment in the community. The number of abandoned homes in that particular community, you can imagine, were even more. I compare that with my time with the Baltimore Development Corporation. There was a time, I started in 89, and I remember a report that they received that said that people come to Baltimore for an afternoon. What are we going to do to make this a three-night town?
Mm-hmm.
That people come here and stay for three nights. The terminology that I use for the Inner Harbor is that it's the insatiable beast. There is never enough. And what I started hearing at Baltimore Development Corporation is that we need one more hotel. We need one more place for people to go when they get here. And what I've seen over time is that for people who understand what the goal was there, they continue to develop the Inner Harbor. And now going to Harbor East, and as a matter of fact, when I was there in 89, that was already in the plans. When it came to Sandtown Winchester, didn't we know that having homeowners was not going to be enough, that everyone was not going to be a homeowner, that in fact people needed jobs to do this? But the same kind of attention and political will, no matter who was mayor over this period of time, has not, we just haven't had that will like we still have for the Inner Harbor and Harbor East.
Before I go to Bart Harvey, Bart, a quote I wanted to share with you. From Alan Tibbles. You remember Alan Tibbles?
I know Alan well.
Right.
Yeah, I knew Alan well.
Yeah, the late Alan Tibbles, who was right at the center of a development of a lot of these homes. He established the New Song community there, right?
Yeah.
Here's a quote from Alan Tibbles from 2005. He died in 2010. He said, "The problems that plague this community didn't happen overnight, and they're not going to be turned around overnight. I think for those of us who have been working to turn it around, we knew we were in it for the long haul." So please speak to that and my perspective here, on Bart, on the scope of the project, taking on this project, and the time needed to see some success.
Yes, and I think Alan said it well. Carol says it well. It is you need an ongoing effort. And if people look at whether the number is $130 million in total or something less than that as the private investment and other investment that went in, it's a drop in the bucket as to what is being spent and the number of people and the needs of those people over time. So the dimensions we're talking about when you look at the west side of Baltimore or you look at the east side of Baltimore are very large, and there are acute problems, and there is no silver bullet to any of it. And we got to the starting point, and what was stunning about the starting point is the starting point is still there. Those homes that we did are, as Carol said, are in better condition now than when they were first put in.
We have to take a break here. We'll come back and hear some more from F. Barton Harvey III, Bart Harvey, who succeeded Jim Rouse as CEO of the Enterprise Foundation. We're talking about Sandtown, Winchester, Freddie's neighborhood, you might say, Freddie Gray's neighborhood. It's where he grew up. It's where he was arrested on April 12th. Carol Reckling is with us, too, from Child First Authority, but here as a senior member of the leadership team of BUILD, Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development, which was intimately involved with redevelopment in Sandtown. When we get back, Congressman Elijah Cummings joins us. Please stay with us. And welcome back to Midday as we focus on Sandtown, Winchester in both hours of the show today. Congressman Elijah Cummings joining us now, who is, he knows more about West Baltimore perhaps than anyone. He spoke at Freddie Gray's funeral only, 8 days ago. He was out there during the unrest making appeals on the street to help quell the tensions at Pennsylvania and North. And Representative Cummings on the show today to talk about an event he has coming up. But also I just want to ask him about Sandtown and the needs of the people there and what we're talking about. So, Congressman Cummings, thanks for joining us on Midday again.
It's good to be with you.
Yeah. You heard our conversation here about Sandtown. When people say to you, well, all that investment Jim Rouse and Mayor Schmoak made over there and BUILD and everybody, and look at it, it's a failure. What do you say to people?
I don't think it's a failure. I think the problems are monumental, and I think that You have a choice. You can stand by and do nothing, and things get worse, or you try to do what you can to make a difference in people's lives. And there are a lot of factors, I think, that go against progress moving as fast as we would all like it to move. I mean, when you have, for example, I know about New Song, and I'll never forget years ago I went to visit New Song, and I was comparing it with the school down the street. And the interesting thing at New Song, the grades were much higher. The test scores were much higher than the school down the street. I mean, it was literally two blocks away. Those kids grow up, and the question is what kind of education are they getting? In other words, if you are bringing back into a community young people who get to the ninth grade and cannot read, or they're reading on a third grade level, that's a problem. And then I think you then find people that get to a point where they cannot qualify for jobs, if the jobs were here. And so in order to sustain a community, you've got to have people who are working. When I had my jobs fair, a lot of the people come. I guarantee you, half of the people, usually we attract about 3,000, 4,000 people. Half of the people, Dan, because we do our survey, have a record.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get caught in this bind or merry-go-round where the education may not have been what it was supposed to be. They then become frustrated. And that's not their fault. They become frustrated. They then, some drop out of school. Some find themselves in criminal trouble. Next thing you know, you got a record. And then you can't get a job. And so where do you go? What do you do? And so with regard to housing, I think the efforts with regard to housing have been commendable. But again, there is a constant need. You probably know this, but we've got a problem with rental housing. That's a real problem today, and it's going to continue to be. Mm-hmm. But again, going back to housing, if you want people to own a house, they got to have a job. And so, you know, and then we have some policies on the federal level that have not helped. I look at Freddie Gray, and I tell people when I looked at him in the casket, I saw me. I saw me as a little boy and where I could have ended up. Because in most of the housing, a lot of the housing that I grew up in had lead paint. We didn't know what lead paint was, really. My mother didn't know anything about lead paint. But a lot of young people are harmed by that. And the federal government, I mean, in Congress, they're cutting the money for lead paint abatement by one-third. And Choice Neighborhoods, money being cut. And we cannot cut our way to a better future. We just can't do it. And some of it's about policies. And so it's a lot to do. And I agree with your guess, but we can't just throw our hands up and say, you know, let it be.
Right. There's a specific issue that you're looking at, Congressman Cummings, with regards to Sandtown, Winchester, and some other neighborhoods, underserved communities, underserved by financial services specifically. You're taking a look at that because you and Elizabeth Warren, Senator Warren, have joined in the Middle Class Prosperity Project, which is coming to Baltimore on Monday. And if you just take a moment here to tell us about what you're looking at there in terms of financial services in underserved communities.
One of the things that we're trying to do, that, by the way, this is the fifth in a series of panel discussions that we've had around the country. And Elizabeth Warren and I joined together over 6 or 7 months ago to begin this. But this one is on looking at how these various check cashing places and payday lender type places are lending money to people. And because they don't have banks, the banks just don't exist in our neighborhoods. In certain neighborhoods, and so they have to. These folks come in and they take advantage of people who are usually the working poor or the working lower middle class at best. And so what we've been trying to do is trying to figure out how people can keep more money when they cash their check, and I mean that not just with regard to this issue. But I mean, generally, people are struggling. They're working harder, and they're more productive than ever, but they're getting less and less money because they've got CEOs and stockholders who are taking more, and the worker is getting less. So we've had one forum on that subject, just where the money goes. We've had another one on college affordability and how all these students who might come from areas like Sandtown, Winchester, assuming they're able to get that far, and then they're saddled with debt coming out of college, and they can't buy a house, can't get married, can't buy a car, and they basically end up in debtor's prison. And so this one, on Monday from 1 to 3 at the law school at Lombard and Packer, we're going to be addressing, I'm sorry, Baltimore and Packer at the law school, University of Maryland Law School. We're going to be addressing that whole idea of payday lending, IRS refund, advance lending, those kind of issues. And one of the things that we're trying to do, Dan, is trying to urge our banks to find a way to get back into our communities. It is so important. And people, there's a culture now in my neighborhood where people don't expect to be able to go to a bank. They expect to have to go somewhere, cash a check, and then a certain percentage of their money is taken out for cashing a check. And that becomes the norm. Well, we got to break that, because that's money that could be going into buying school clothes or paying for the necessities of life.
Representative Cummings, thanks for joining us. I'll tell folks again, it's your forum, the latest in your series of forums, the Middle Class Prosperity Project, 1 to 3 p.m. Monday at the University of Maryland Law School.
Law School,
Carey,
yes.
School of Law. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, and I thank your guests. They're great, and I admire both of them tremendously, and I appreciate all that they've done to change the world, and I really mean that.
Thank you, Congressman.
Thank you, Congressman. This Carol Reckling with us in the studio here, part of the senior leadership team with BUILD, Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development, that worked in Sandtown, Winchester, and F. Barton Harvey. Bart Harvey, the man who succeeded James Rouse as CEO of the Enterprise Foundation, and was very involved in the Sandtown project there. But the question that I get from Congressman Cummings is this word investment and the lack of jobs in the community. So, Bart Harvey, I want to ask you, and then Carol, I'll ask you. After housing, were efforts made to bring jobs to Sandtown or nearby to have a, you know, get a company to put some roots down there to generate some jobs for the area?
Well, I can.
Go ahead, Carol.
Carol, you can go.
No, I just wanted to speak to one initiative that BUILD did, and that was citywide, and that was we organized with low-wage workers to get the first living wage bill in the country passed, and that, in and of itself, I mean, the reports that we got back from people that we had been organizing with, and it was over 200 people who were making minimum wage, is that going from $6 to $8 at the time made a difference in just their being able to provide food, clothing. I mean, it was amazing the change that we saw in people. And so that was one thing. But there have been other efforts, and we knew that there needed to be more efforts to get people employed. I mean, that was just
right. And my idea, I guess my idea would be, what about an employer nearby? Because I know there are some. I just came across the P. Flanagan Company asphalt plant is over there. But what about that, Bart?
Yeah, we made a concerted effort to try and get a number of people into jobs. And there was, in fact, a center that was set up to do that for both employment and to look at creating new jobs. There was a market, as you well know, that was revived and put up near Pennsylvania Avenue. You know, just a quick vignette that Congressman Cummings hit on was that we sent down a number of people to get jobs, and they are automatic excludes. The number, as he said, of people who had been incarcerated and then had come back out is very large in certain areas of Baltimore, and on the east side and the west side, Sandtown's one of them. And you can be automatically excluded from any job just by being having a jail record, and so that happened. And the job efforts are harder. And if you step back and look at what's happening in the country, you know, only 7% of the jobs in Baltimore are manufacturing jobs now. And that's from over 50 to 60% going back 20, 30 years. So your skill level, this is another thing Congressman Cummings was talking about, has to be higher. There are fewer jobs. And the service jobs, and Carol touched on this, because your wages don't allow you enough to even rent in most areas. So there's concentrated poverty that falls into the Sandtown, Winchester areas of the world in the West and the East, and some of the South Side.
This is also because the city made the choice to put all of its eggs in the Inner Harbor and the reliance on entertainment and service jobs in the service sector, even at that time. And I've heard a lot of people say, why didn't anybody stand up? Well, a lot of people did stand up. And I know that Reverend Vernon Dobson, who was a co-founder of Build and a revered pastor in the community, one of the things that he was promised by, Governor Schaefer, he was the mayor at the time, is that there would be attention to jobs. However, what happened was these are part-time jobs that were paying minimum wage and no benefits.
See, that was the idea.
That was the trade-off for the development.
But we expected more. We were told, we were promised more, that you had to expand the tax base in Baltimore. You had to get people coming back into the city. You had to generate revenues somehow, hotels, conventions, the Inner Harbor. James Rouse brought us Harbor Place. And so we thought, okay, you got to do that. So, Carol, you're saying that the jobs, there weren't enough jobs and they didn't pay enough.
And they didn't pay enough. And I think moving forward, we're looking at where, who are the employers that are skill-based that can yield the kind of jobs that people can make a living and make a career and move forward. And this is people from, that we're talking about now, including those who are returning from prison. And that's the kind of work that Build is doing.
That's Carol Reckling, who is on the senior leadership team of Build, Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development. F. Barton Harvey. Bart Harvey is with us by phone, former CEO of the Enterprise Foundation, who was very involved as well in Sandtown, Winchester. The problems of ex-offenders, I mean, this could be critical in the future here. If you look at the number that came out from the Justice Policy Institute, with 458 inmates from Sandtown, Winchester, the cost to incarcerate them, $17 million a year. We're going to take a short break. When we get back, we'll meet Pastor Dr. Lewis Wilson of New Song Community Church, which is playing a role in helping ex-offenders, or as they call them, returning citizens in Sandtown, Winchester. This is the Midday Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday. We're going to say hello first on the phone line to Douglas Miles, Reverend Miles, pastor of Koinonia Baptist Church, former president of the Interdenominational Ministerial Alliance, and former co-chair of Build, to talk a little bit about Sandtown, Winchester. Bishop Miles, I'm glad you called in. Thank you.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity. I'm no longer president of the Interdenominational Ministerial Alliance. Let me correct that first.
Well, I think I said former. I said former, I believe.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's all right. But Bishop Miles, give us your perspective on Sandtown.
Right. The Build organization, along with Jim Rouse, built the housing, but that was not supposed to be the be-all of redevelopment in Sandtown. We have in Baltimore sometimes selective memory. This was not just a failure on the part of the city government to invest, but also the state government. The state government was committed as far back as 1970 to creating redevelopment around the subway stop and redevelopment of the market and Pennsylvania Avenue. Those things never took place. And because they did not take place and we continue to not invest in the neighborhood surrounding Sandtown in a meaningful way, that's what makes it look to some folk as if it's a failure. But how can it be a failure when you've created 600 homeowners and you reduce crime in that immediate area, and to some extent, because the crime rate would even be higher if you did not have those 600 homeowners anchoring that community. So I think we need to focus on moving forward from here as to how the city and the state can invest in Sandtown to make it whole.
I just want you to do this for me, Bishop Miles. We're up in the sky looking down on West Baltimore, Sandtown. It is a large area. For people listening to our show who aren't familiar with this, maybe never even heard of Sandtown, Winchester, until the problems of the last few weeks and the arrest and then the death of Freddie Gray. What does it look like? I mean, as you describe it, as we've already established, there's housing there that's been in place now for 20 years or better. But then it's a large area. I use the word sprawling to describe it.
Right. It's an area that's distressed because, again, there has been no real investment beyond Sandtown. If the Pennsylvania Avenue hub had been redeveloped as it once was, as the hub of the African-American community, number one, it would have added to the tourist attractions of Baltimore City. If you had an entertainment section along Pennsylvania Avenue, it would give people another day to spend in Baltimore, to come uptown and see what's going on. So you have a lot of abandoned property now. You have a lot of folks who are unemployed, a high incidence of youth unemployment. And again, it's going to take a massive now reinvestment in that area to make it whole.
Thank you very much for those comments, Bishop Douglas Miles, who served as chair of Build. It was co-chair of Build back in the day. So, and Carol and Bart Harvey is on the phone. Just help, again, with the boundaries of Sandtown, Winchester. To the west, how far west are we talking about? Like, what streets?
Oh, my God.
What would you say? Yeah. I mean, you can do it for us. Okay. Reverend Wilson is with us, I'm glad to say, from the New Song community. Can you help us with that, sir?
Yeah. On the north side, you have North Avenue.
Right.
On the east side, you have Pennsylvania Avenue.
Got that, yeah.
On the west side, you have Monroe.
Okay.
One side of Monroe is actually a different community. The east side of Monroe is Sandtown.
Okay.
And then on the south side, you have Franklin.
Right.
Thank you very much for doing that. Pastor Lewis Wilson of New Song Community Church, which played an important role in Sandtown, Winchester. Let me just give a little background here. New Song is a Presbyterian church.
Presbyterian church.
Founded in 1988. There's New Song Academy. There's a reference to that already been made by Congressman Cummings, which is an elementary and middle school. That sprung up, as well as a health clinic, and the Sandtown Habitat for Humanity all worked with New Song on that project. Habitat's efforts were spearheaded by one of the church's founders, who I mentioned earlier, Alan Tibbles, who was a quadriplegic man who grew up in Baltimore County, went to Milford Mill High School, ended up committing himself to this community, Sandtown Winchester. As I said, he died in 2010, but that program resulted in 300 of the homes being built, or new homes, or renovated in the community. And a few weeks ago, we had another member of your New Song community on the show with us, Antoine Bennett, talking about his program, Men of Valuable Action, a mentoring program for fathers who are high school dropouts and who have also been incarcerated. So anyway, I thank you for being here today. Dr. Lewis Wilson arrived at New Song just earlier this year in January.
January.
Yeah. So I wondered if you would just share with us, as an outsider living there, your perspective on that community. What do you see from day to day? What does it feel like? What do you think it needs?
Well, I'm no longer an outsider. Part of our New Song mantra is, if you're staff, you have to live there. So I live in Sandtown, I was three blocks away from where the incident happened with Freddie Gray. The corner I live on is Stricker, right there in Pressman, which used to be, from what I've been told, one of the most violent corners in Sandtown. I think people have a very skewed picture of Sandtown based upon any number of reasons. The block that we live on, they call my wife the cleanup lady because we just got there, but she literally gets out and sweeps our street, you know, every day. And there are people on our block who are retired and people who go to work every day. That doesn't get in the papers. You know, people don't know there are good citizens in Sandtown and people who want the best for Sandtown. And so we've talked to both young and old, very respectful, very loving. New Song is a church that is ethnically diverse, and our people don't fear coming there, and some have even taken up residence there. And yet I also have talked to people who were extremely angry, especially after Freddie Gray, and counseled with them in my office and trying to curb that anger, or at least direct it. Not saying that they should not be angry, but direct the anger in such a way that your voice is heard.
Were you surprised at the level of anger directed at the police, I assume, is what you're saying?
Yes.
You were surprised at the level of it compared to, you came from Chicago, right?
Yeah. Well, I come from South Side Chicago, Inglewood, which is the most violent community in the country, bar none. And that's where I was born and raised. Left there some years ago, but my daddy was born and raised in Inglewood. His mother was born and raised in Inglewood. So I'm a ghetto boy by any stretch of the imagination. And so I'm not new to violence. You know, I ride it doing King, you know, that's how old I am. And And I know why I was doing what I was doing. And sometimes it wasn't, you know, out of pure anger. It's because I could get me a watch out of the local store that I just broke a window out of. So there's always a mixed thing. There's anger, and then there's also you take advantage of a situation.
But the anger that you heard in this community directed at the police, were you surprised at the level of that, the scope of it?
No.
Okay.
I wasn't surprised. What happens, the loudest voices, I think, sometimes get heard, and those voices that are more congenial, those voices that may be able to sit at a table and actually get something done to cause productive change may not be at the table. Because, you know, if you've got two people in the room and two of them have a calm voice and they really want to have a dialogue, the two that have the loudest voice are the ones that the cameras go to. Those are the voices that get heard. And so when you look at, matter of fact, we talk with young brother who is Freddie Gray's cousin, and one of the things that they were saying, they did not want to see, if they saw violence jump off, that they were going to walk down the street the other way, because that's not what they wanted to participate in. So a lot of the anger, it was not the people in Sandtown. You did see people marching. A lot of the marching in Sandtown itself was actually peaceful marching. It's when it got outside of Sandtown.
Pastor Wilson, I'm going to talk to you more in the second hour of the show about your efforts with ex-offenders, returning citizens to Sandtown. Bart Harvey has been on the phone with us, and I had another question for you before the time is up in this hour, and then we're going to continue our conversation about Sandtown with some other guests there. So when you drive around Sandtown, I see Gilmore Homes, the projects is there. Mm-hmm. I see the new homes that Carol Reckling and you have referred to here. Mm-hmm. And then you see just dilapidated, terrible old Baltimore row houses that are vacant and boarded up. And I know you're familiar with this, Bart. So when you drive from one block into the next and say, oh, well, how am I going to get it over here? How are we going to get redevelopment here? How are we going to get people to buy into this? Where's the money going to come from? We've already made our commitment here. We need more funds. So where do you turn to for that? You know, public-private partnerships, nonprofits, go to Congress, say, give us block grants again. How do you get that generated now? It's in 2015.
I think the answer to that one is that you have to have a long-term plan and investment in place, and you have to bring jobs back in. And if this is an issue for every city, not just Baltimore, and for every part of Baltimore as well. If you look at what's going on over on the east side, on the east, on EBDI,
near Hopkins,
you need a long-term partnership and a lot of state, city, federal investment. And you got to bring jobs, and that is the only thing that begins to get your economic multiplier working in these areas, and that can happen. And when it does happen, it is really important. And so you're looking at EDS and MEDS as being the educational. The colleges, et cetera, and Johns Hopkins Medical and other University of Baltimore Medical, it's being large employers. And those employers employ, amazingly, not from the surrounding neighborhoods, but a great majority of it is outside. And so you need to be able to train and to supply good workers. You have to get around the ex-offenders. You have to put in places, Reverend Miles said, a kind of hub that really puts the kind of money that's going into downtown, into these neighborhoods over a longer period of time that is sustainable, and that will bring jobs to those areas. This is a critical issue, and I'd love to just end, Dan, in saying, you know, this is an issue about poverty. It's about police and policing, which is the face of what happens. But it's about poverty, lack of jobs, the change of jobs in the global economy, and every city has it. And something like this could happen in every inner city where there is concentrated poverty and people that are desperate to work and are desperate to get by and to live a decent life. And there are a lot of people in those communities that are terrific people and good citizens and that are part of the social cohesion of it. But you have to address this. You have to address it, or you're going to see many more of what we've seen in Baltimore and other places.
Bart Harvey, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Yeah, Bart Harvey is the man who succeeded Jim Rouse as CEO of the Enterprise Foundation, now known as Enterprise Community Partners and Enterprise Community Investment. So I thank Bart Harvey. But Carol Reckling, before you leave, I just want to ask you about the same question. I mean, it's great that the CVS says they're going to rebuild. Maybe they could build another CVS somewhere, but that sounds like minimum or just above minimum wage jobs. That's not the kind of jobs we're talking about on the scale that I think would be needed for Baltimore.
No, but it's important. But I have to say,
I'm not saying it's not important. I'm just saying, what does it get you? It doesn't get you over the line from poverty, does it?
It doesn't. And we're talking something that's big. And in my lifetime, I have never seen change that came because those people who make the decisions did it because of a good reason. I've never seen that happen. It only happens, change for poor, working poor, disenfranchised people, only happens with organized pressure. And that's how we started with Nehemiah Homes. That's how we created the public and private partnership that you're talking about. And that's what it's going to take moving forward. They're just not going to do the right thing for the right reason. I just don't believe it.
All right, Carol. Thank you. Carol's going to stay with us for the next hour, too, as is Reverend Wilson. And we have some other guests lined up, including Mayor Kurt L. Schmoke, the former mayor of Baltimore, will be joining us in the second hour of midday. Before we go there, Saeed has been holding to make a comment. And go right ahead, Saeed. I'll let you close out the hour for us. What did you want to say? Saeed? How about Don in Annapolis? I'll take Don's call instead. Don was holding also. But listen, we will open the phone lines in the second hour of the show. Both of those callers had to flee, but we will open the phone lines. This is how you reach us here in midday, and you can send me an email, too, with comments for the second hour of our show. The email address, midday@wypr.org. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Toll-free long distance, 866-661-9309. As we talk about Sandtown, Winchester, the neighborhood you've been hearing so much about, if you weren't paying attention before, didn't know much about it, you certainly have learned more just in the last couple of weeks because of the Freddie Gray story. It's where Freddie Gray grew up. It's where he was arrested on April 12th, a week before he died from injuries sustained in police custody. Just the news today, Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake saying that the Justice Department she has asked the Justice Department to investigate the city police and their practices. She's saying that police officers will have body cameras by 2016. Also today, Maryland Governor Larry Hogan saying he would lift the state of emergency that he imposed on Baltimore 10 days ago. He reported at a press conference in Annapolis today that the National Guard and police from outside jurisdictions who came here to help the Baltimore City Police are now gone. So listen for more news about that. We'll pass that along to you in the second hour of our show as WYPR reporters Chris Connolly and P. Kenneth Burns get back from those respective press conferences. And more ahead in the second hour, all about Sandtown. If you have questions or comments, please give us a ring in the second hour of our show. We'll take a break here for lunch and come back for more midday. So please stay with us.